Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Mr. Host at 7 o'clock right now on this day, 1919. The first ever hydrofoil was designed by the Bells. That would be Alexander Graham Bell and his wife Mabel Bell. And it would set a water speed record of 114 kilometers per hour. In 1971, on this day, Apple Records would release the second solo album of one John Lennon, titled Imagine, in the US. And in 1973, on this day, Jackie Stewart would win his third Drivers' Championship title at Monza in Italy, despite having finished fourth in that race. On the same day, exactly 6 years later, Jody Scheckter would win his first Drivers' Championship at the exact same race course in Monza. This would be the first South African champion in Formula One history. And 1985, on this day, Ronald Reagan would order that sanctions against South Africa, or sanctions be placed against South Africa, in an effort to end apartheid. Initially, he didn't want this to happen. Interestingly, I don't know why. I wish we could ask him. In 2010, on this day, there would be a Philippines court order that would order the former First Lady of the Philippines to pay back $280,000 for a theft perpetrated, or for monies that were taken 27 years prior to that by her husband. In 2015, on this day, Queen Elizabeth would beat her great-great-grandmother's record as the longest reigning monarch in the UK at 63 years and 7 months. The previous record would have obviously been held by her great-grandmother, Queen Victoria. I don't know if anyone's going to break that record anytime soon. You're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Moyaha, and on the show today, we take a look at Sun International numbers. They gave us an update on their performance for the first half of the year. We have a conversation with the CEO, Anthony Leeming, around that to get a sense of how the company is doing and what or where to for the second half of the year, rather. Then we've got a conversation with Treasury One around the Rand. It seems to be that the Rand is continuing to do well. At the moment, it is one of the top performing currencies against the US dollar, despite the fact that we are seeing a bit of weakness in it as we start off this week. We're going to speak to Andre Celiers about that and get a sense of what to expect for the Rand for the rest of the year. Then we have a conversation around digital payments, the world of digital payments. We're going to speak to the president and CEO at ACI Worldwide around the digital payments infrastructure, the ecosystem, and what it all means for the future of payments. And then, because it's Monday, we've got personal finance on a Monday, we're going to be taking a look at buying a secondhand car, what you need to know, what you need to think about, and what could potentially affect your decision.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It might be a new week, but we like our consistency. And in keeping with that consistency, we start off with how the markets have been moving throughout the week, or throughout the day, rather. I'm joined on the line by Makwe Masilela, who's a Chief Investment Officer at Makwe Fund Managers, to take a look at the developments throughout the day. Dr. Masilela, good evening. Lovely to speak to you as always. Markets kind of not doing much today. Very unimpressive.
Definitely an after evening to you and to your listeners. But our international peers seems to be doing okay. I mean, it's only us who ended more or less flat. And I think the fact that we've been seeing our resources going down, I mean, that had a negative impact on us. Our industrials were flat. You know, only financials were doing okay, up 0.6%. But Jimmy, I think the issue here is all this data that has been coming through now lately, we've seen some recession fears emerging again, and risk on momentum in stocks are coming to mount worries that growth is set to cracks, but seemingly it's no longer the case if you look what is happening with the international picture. And yes, China's economy picture is worsening with deflation risk rising, and we all expect that the U.S. to reduce interest rates, inflation calls, labor market slows. But Jimmy, the big question is now whether a small rate cut would be enough to keep the U.S. economy in expansion mode. We expect the ECB to cut come this Thursday. Investors continue to wait for the U.S. inflation data. I think it will be released on Wednesday to gauge the size of an expected rate cut. And markets, I think, internationally is because this renewed wave of deep buying revived a rebound when it comes to stocks after that sell-off that was triggered by economic concerns. So basically, people are buying the dips, and unfortunately, with us back home here, we're doing okay at some point. I mean, around 4:30 or so, we're just in the positive nicely. So it's only the last 30 minutes of our trading that we've seen losing some of the ground. I mean, around 4:30, I think we're up around 9.6%.
Marco, when we look at the conversation around the potential for a recession, how tricky is it getting now to balance between a recessionary kind of planning environment and a soft landing kind of environment? Is there a significant difference between the two, and which ones are markets leaning more towards at this point?
I think we have to be clear. There's a book definition of those things, but reality tells us something else. Mm. Yes, we're expecting soft landing, but to avoid a recession, markets are happy to say, okay, maybe the guys have to come with a supersized cut when it comes to interest rates, because they strongly believe that the U.S. have been behind the curve already. Canada, Switzerland, European Central Bank have started cutting interest rates. So not to reverse the case that they've made so far, they might as well move much faster. Jimmy, there's been this whole thing that we trusted for years, the inversion of the yield curve, signaling that recession might be coming. That has been trusted for years. The minute you see, you know, the longer term bonds, you know, the yields thereof being lower than the shorter term bonds, because ordinarily, if you keep your money much longer, because of the risk, you'll expect a higher return. But if you keep it shorter, the returns don't have to be that great. But if you see the opposite happening, that for years has been an indication of a possible recession. Jimmy, that has been expected since 2022, and it has not materialized as yet. Hence, I'm saying there is this book definition and this reality. And soft landing as well, we might be ahead of ourselves, because so far people continue to show some resistance, continue to borrow money, continue to buy stuff. You know, the cheap money that we've been getting from Japan has managed to help a lot of things going around. And hence, we were worried when we seen that reversal of that carry trade. My point here is anything is possible now lately.
Anything is possible, and markets are certainly trying to price as much of that in as possible. Marco, when we look at some local developments, the likes of AVI gave us numbers today. Was there anything interesting there that's piqued your interest?
Yeah. Headline earnings per share up 24%, pleasing performance in a challenging environment because of the constrained consumer demand, increasing competition, and that's in all their categories, unreliable municipality infrastructure impacting manufacturing side, INJ impacted by poor cash rates and constrained abalone markets, and the weaker rent and rising raw material cost also having an impact, and direct cost of load shedding of almost 33.2 million. But the price increases in all categories managed to offset the cost increase pressures.
Marco, let's look at Capitec. They had an interesting day today. Not much happened by way of announcements from Capitec, but the share price hit 52-week highs, and we actually touched 3,000 Rand a share for the first time ever.
Yeah, you know, they just told us that they expect their group headline earnings per share to go up by 37% because they've seen the credit losses improving as the guys continue to tighten their lending criteria. And we've seen the net transaction and commission income, including value-added services, continue to contribute to strong growth in non-lending income. So I think markets are happy because of those expectations.
Marco, what are your expectations for the rest of the week? This is a big week considering it's the week before interest rate decisions are set to take place in the US and in South Africa. What are your expectations around what we could potentially see with regards to portfolio adjustments or traders perhaps moving around some of their positions? What are you thinking?
I think after the Wednesday consumer inflation from the US, then we'll see a lot of repositioning. That's if those numbers don't confirm what markets are already expecting, because so far we expect that definitely we will get a 25 basis point, cut from the US. But now, should markets start expecting something else, then definitely that will affect the positioning. But I think, Jimmy, most of the things have been factored in into our portfolios, because as with rate cuts as an example, it's no longer a question of whether it's going to happen or not. It's a question of the size.
What happens if we go into next week and that size is less than impressive? The size is 25 basis points and the market was perhaps hoping for a 50 basis points. Is it going to be a significant movement, or is it going to cause a significant concern within the market, or is it too early to tell at this stage?
Definitely, it will be a disappointment, but fortunately for most market participants, at least for those that I know of, are expecting a 25 basis points, which is a cautionary way of doing things, and should it be much better, then that's a bonus for them. But most guys are starting to expect around 25 basis points.
And what are we expecting from our side on the local front? We have our rates decision, I think it's the very next day after the US.
They have to follow suit in a way. Our inflation, Jimmy, is sitting at 4.6%. Our inflation target is 3.69%. But the guys are happy when inflation expectations are anchored around 4.5%. They've been worried about load shedding. Load shedding seems to have been sorted. The economy is starting to pick momentum. And to maintain that interest rate differential between the US dollar and the rent, I think they also have to follow suit and make sure that they cut interest rates as well.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how this all plays out. We'll be keenly looking forward to that data on Wednesday, and we'll certainly catch up once the data has come out. Thank you, Makwe, as always, for the time and for the insights. Makwe Maselela, Chief Investment Officer at Makwe Fund Managers, on the week's expectations and what's been moving the markets today.
Hello, Jeremy Maggs here. I've just finished recording the next episode of Fix SA on MoneyWeb. I'm in conversation with the former chief executive of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange and soldier, Roy Anderson. We'll be looking at leadership style and approach when it comes to solving problems, comparing the role of discipline in military and civilian leadership, and strategies for setting and achieving goals under pressure.
Join me, Jeremy Maggs, and South Africa's top leaders on the fortnightly MoneyWeb Fix SA podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
8 o'clock this morning was the time that Sun International gave us their SENS announcement of their interim results for the 6 months ended the 30th of June 2024. I'm joined on the line by Sun International's CEO, Anthony Leeming, to take a look at these numbers and try and make sense of the company's performance at the stage. Good evening, Anthony. Lovely to speak to you again. Tough environment for consumers in South Africa, but your numbers suggest you're still doing well.
Yeah, good evening, Jimmy, and good evening to your listeners. Yeah, it's been a tough environment. I think with our sort of portfolio of assets, hotels and resorts doing really well, benefiting from international tourism as well as local. Our Sunbed platform on the online side doing exceptionally well with strong growth. And then you've got our urban casinos that probably not as well as you'd like, but ultimately starting to bottom out, and we think good growth potential going forward. So the mix of the portfolio produced a credible sort of 5% revenue growth and EBITDA at 4%. With our earnings growing quite a lot stronger than that, at close to 10%.
Anthony, let's zoom into that online platform, the Sunbet business. Obviously, coming out of the necessity that was COVID, looking back on it now, almost a blessing of sorts. I mean, you probably would have had it in the pipeline as a business, but the acceleration and bringing it to life sooner rather than later has clearly paid off.
Yeah, it has. But I mean, having said that, we think we still have a lot more growth to come in the online space. We're still not the biggest operator by a long way. And, we got a big share of the casino, urban casino market, but not so much online. So we've experienced great growth. We have a great product. And we believe we have a great offering to package the land-based casinos as well as the online, as well as our resorts and hotels. So for the consumer, we think we've got a great offering and therefore a lot more growth to come in the online space.
Anthony, when we look at that online space, how is it different from kind of the rest of the business? I mean, Sun International has been at the traditional casino model for many, many, many years, and to now pivot into a new kind of digital space obviously allows you to attract new kinds of clients from different geographies without having to put money into it in the form of actual physical buildings. Are you finding that space is looking better than the traditional space, or do you still have those clients that prefer the traditionals?
Oh, look, it's the traditional casinos are still the bulk of our business. And obviously, I think the customer goes to the, normally their closest casino. Some do move around, but clearly it's much more convenient to go to a local casino that's close to you. Whereas obviously on the online space, it's very easy to switch between one operator and the other. The products are similar. So we got to look at how we differentiate ourselves, how we can be the best operator. And we think complementing our land-based casino with the online offering and with hotels and resorts we can go away and casino gambling really is beneficial for the customer from a loyalty perspective and from just offering them more. And I think giving back a bit more in the online space and land-based is really where we've got a big advantage over some of our competitors.
Anthony, speaking of that physical space casinos, do we have an update on the Pyrmont acquisition?
A little bit. We have extended the approval to the end of the month. We do believe they'll shortly make a decision, and that gets referred to the tribunal. So that's still not until an exact date. Then on the Gauteng Gaming Board, we're waiting for that hearing. We have been approved by the KZN Gaming Board. So ultimately, I think it's still going to be a little bit, probably Q1 next year, we should be through all the hurdles and hopefully implementing the transaction.
Sounds like there's a lot of hurdles and a lot of red tape that goes into these sorts of deals. Anthony, I want to move to the hotels and sort of accommodations and resorts business. That we really have seen struggle to get back to normality, so to speak, post COVID period, just the hospitality sector as a whole, not specifically Sun International. How are you seeing the space at the moment? Are we seeing an increase in domestic and foreign tourism? Are we now getting kind of back into the swing of things and finding momentum?
Yeah, look, I think I'll disagree a little bit. I think we bounced back pretty quickly, really around local leisure demand with not many people traveling. So initially that came back pretty quickly, and then the conference business also bounced really nicely. And then we've been followed now by international, then obviously particularly Cape Town, which has boomed. But that's also starting to feed into all the lodges and around the other areas. So I think tourism is starting to do really well and has recovered pretty nicely, and particularly the Sun International portfolio. We're less reliant on a pure business travel hotel other than the Maslow. But certainly, you know, Sun City done exceptionally well, growing top line at room rates at 13%, occupancy holding up, Table Bay exceptional strong growth on both occupancy and room rates, and that's primarily international demand. So we have actually enjoyed quite a boom in tourism, being at the right end, conferencing, international tourism and local leisure.
Anthony, let's reflect on that dividend. Bumper increase in the interim dividend, obviously reflective of a stronger performance within the business, but also of more positivity from, I suppose, from a management team to say, look, we kind of are optimistic around what's happened and where we are headed.
Yeah, since we started paying dividends, you know, we've been paying about 75% of adjusted earnings. And even over that time, we continue to de-gear. So it just shows the cash generation ability of the business. And so be able to return cash to shareholders. I think over the last 2 years, we returned over $2.2 billion in dividends as well as share buybacks. We've completed roughly $200 million share buybacks. So a very cash-in business and really producing great returns for shareholders.
How do you position a business like that going into the second half of the year, understanding that there will obviously be a lot more to come with people might potentially benefiting from a lower interest rates or a reduction in interest rates and just general positive sentiment seemingly coming back for the South African consumer?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we're the type of business that really is about the consumer. So I think everything we do is about trying to look after them and make them want to come back to us. So, you know, that's not going to change. So ultimately, consumers can choose to either go gamble or not. So giving them that experience that they deserve and really giving them value for money is what it's about. So I think that will hold true even when they've got money or in tough times or good times. And certainly we see a lot of tailwinds coming. I think the less load shedding, interest rates reductions, lower inflation, the government of national unity. So a lot of positive sentiment. And we think that's very good for the consumer and ultimately very good for our type of business.
Anthony, the Pyrmont deal is kind of doing its own thing, it's waiting for its own approvals and everything. Are you looking at anything else? Are you seeing any other areas of opportunity, perhaps not in acquisitions, perhaps in partnerships as well? I mean, there were some international hotel companies that came through and partnered with you on the management of their businesses. Are you seeing other sorts of opportunities coming up?
Yeah, we are looking at a little bit of online expansion in Africa. Certainly Botswana should hopefully by the end of this year, as well as Namibia. We got a route operator license in Botswana. We've just been awarded 500 positions. So it's incremental. You know, online is you don't have to invest significant capital. We have the platform and we have the technology. So rolling it out, there's a few differences, payment gateways and the like. But we have the ability to roll out quite easily and not that expensive. So certainly that's a great market for us to try and penetrate. And we'll continue to look at some other African markets. But at this stage, I think Piedmont's going to be a big nut to crack and a lot of focus on there on integration and the plans around that.
What does that integration look like before I let you go, Anthony? Is it something where you're looking at potentially something like a rebranding exercise, or is it more around just making sure that what Piedmont previously had in terms of systems and things lines up with the Sun International Group and then taking it from there?
Look, it's a bit of both. I think Empress is really a great asset. I mean, there's not a lot we can sort of make it much better, but I think what we can bring is the Sun MBG loyalty program, the brand that can enhance their customer expectations and their customer reward from being a member of the MBG brand. So I think using what they've got, it really is a great product. They have some great issues in their loyalty. We've got to combine them, make the customer better off both sides and on the online space as well. Their customers can join us as well as all our resort properties. So we think we've got a compelling offering for their customer and joining the sort of the MBG brand. We're not going to go and change Empress to anything different other than put the overriding Sun International brand and our loyalty program in place and continue to grow. So a lot of work around the customer facing and a lot of work around process and systems will be the issues for the next 6 months or 2 years.
Certainly a busy 6 months ahead for you and the team. We'll leave it at that, and we wish you the best of luck. We'll catch up sooner rather than later, I hope. That was Anthony Leeming, CEO of Sun International, joining me to reflect on their first half of the year's performance as well as how they're gearing up for the second half of the year.
Some investments have a pulse, a palpable impact, a sustainable impact. These are living investments that move and grow, multiply, change lives, change our planet. These are the kind you'll find on sunlaminvestments.com. Sunlam Investments, live with confidence. Sunlam Investment Management is an authorized financial services provider.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Just a reminder, folks, tomorrow is Money Summit. It takes place at the Sandton Convention Center from 9 a.m. Tomorrow, you'll hear that Dudu Ramelo will be standing in for me because I will be at the Money Summit. If you are attending the Money Summit, I look forward to seeing you all there. If you have not registered for the Money Summit, unfortunately, you've missed your opportunity to register, but we will send you pictures so that you get some serious FOMO about not attending. That being said, we're going to move on to taking a look at some developments around the rand in South Africa and the performance of the rand in recent times. We've seen that the rand has come out or has been ranked as the third strongest currency against the US dollar in terms of year-to-date measurements amongst a basket of 25 currencies. I'm joined on the line by Andre Celiers, director at Treasury One, to take a look at this and try and see what this means for the performance of the rand. Andre, good evening. Lovely to speak to you again. Very interesting performance from the rand, especially considering how undervalued it remains and how difficult a time it has been.
Yes, good evening to all the listeners. Certainly an interesting year. But then, you know, when we speak about the rand, you have to look at a lot of things that happened in this country over the year. A change in government, and a change in government that I have, for many years, said, you know, investors look at a country differently than what we look from it from the inside. So, for instance, if you look at the change of government in a lot of countries, especially in Africa, goes along with a fair amount of turmoil. Here we've had the majority party that was in power coming in at only around 40% and a handover of power, forming of a national government of unity without anything changing, with no guns, no tanks, no fights, no nothing. Investors like that. I think they specifically like the government of national unity that was formed. It's a couple of months later and there's no change. We had doomsday you know, everybody was waiting for the lights to go out the day after the election and load shedding to return. It's 4 months later. It's not happened. The lights have stayed on for a very long time now. That's wonderful for the economy. So no wonder the Rand took its cue from that investor confidence, renewed interest in our bond market, stability in government and so forth, and appreciated tremendously. The question is, what's from here?
Andre, when we look at that and we look at the performance of the Rand, and we just look at the importance of that country risk premium, how I think we often underestimate the fact that this is something that is taken very seriously by investors to measure the level of risk associated with investing in our country. How much of that premium has actually come down because we've had these things in place, because we've fixed the own goals, so to speak, that only South Africa could have fixed?
I think it would be fair to say that that risk premium that investors placed on the country, and we see that in credit default swaps and so forth, in the change there. But I'm willing to say that, in far as I'm concerned, that's most probably been halved by investors.
Mm.
And there is other factors that comes to mind as well. We 2 weeks away from the most debated Federal Reserve meeting, and the one that I think everybody waits in great anticipation of what's happening there, because the end of the high interest rate cycle seems to be at an end, and we could see a change in interest rates. Now, that helped with renewed interest in our bond market, because you need to get in whilst interest rates are high and lock in those high yields for you. So what does it look like going forward, and how do we look for the rest of the year? Well, if interest rate changes in the US in 2 weeks' time, I think it's fair to say that we can expect the South African Reserve Bank's monetary policy to follow suit. That could give some money back into the pockets of very distressed consumers, both here and in America. And that could be the spark to a little bit of growth throughout the world if other countries follow suit. And that in turn could be wonderful for further declines in interest rates. That could be wonderful for the retail sector, company growth, etc. I mean, it just becomes enormous. And because South Africa would move in tandem with international markets, specifically America, when lowering interest rates, the differential between interest rates wouldn't differ that much going forward. It would remain very stable, in my opinion. And that, in turn, would then not be negative for the Rand, but would be positive for the Rand. And I think the currency that could come under pressure would be the US dollar. So the Rand could very well remain within this trading range of 17.5 to 18.5 for the rest of the year, with the possibility of trading towards the lower end of the range, and at times most probably break it a little bit and go below.
Andre, when we look at that range, some analysts have forecast that we might even see 16.82. Is that a realistic number?
Yes, that's always a very debatable one, how realistic and unrealistic things are. I think when we look at South Africa, we are an export-driven market that needs our exports. We need those dollars to roll in from our exports. And the stronger we get, the more competitive it becomes for our exporters. So I would certainly hope that it actually does not go there. It would be good for other things in terms of imports and fuel prices and so forth. But we are trading at the lower levels of the fuel price if you look at a 12 to 13-month period. So there's a possibility of that happening. I do think that it's not going to happen, because if that happens, we would take the rand to levels where we tend to go towards the overvalued situation, in my opinion. The risk premium from investors is not completely gone, and it's not going to go away overnight. There will always be a risk premium. So I'm on the 1720 bottomish area, but then moving back into that 1750, 1850 trading range.
That's a very interesting perspective. It's not often that you see an analyst come through and say that too much strength might not be the best idea at this point, but we'll leave it at that. Andre, thank you so much for the time and for the insights. That's Andre Celiers, director at Treasury One, sharing his thoughts on the performance of the Rand thus far, the fact that it is performing against the dollar as one of the best performing currencies at the moment, and what it could what could happen for the rest of the year.
Is Bitcoin mining about to take off in South Africa? There's plenty of surplus solar power in the country after years of load shedding as we experienced, with a shortage in clients. My name is Carl Jager, research group leader at the CSIR and CEO of Silver Sixpence, and I will be on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast with Kieran Ryan, where we will unpack this, and we'll also talk about ExoChain, a new tool that we developed at the CSIR to track down stolen crypto.
Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Given the digital age that we live in and the advancements of technologies that we have been seeing, I wondered if we'd be worth looking into the digital payments world. We're seeing an increase in the number of digital payments that have taken place throughout the world, but also the reliance on good quality digital payments. Just recently, we looked at the common monetary areas changed or adjustments in regulations that will come into effect this month that now have certain countries having to process cross-border payments instead of what traditionally used to be domestic payments. I'm joined in studio by the president and CEO at ACI, Thomas Worsop, to take a look at the world of digital payments and try and understand how we can leverage the technology that exists today. Thomas, thanks so much for coming through to studio. Let's start by understanding the increase in the demand for faster, more reliable, more efficient payment methods.
Yeah, if you can go back a long way in history, and the payments infrastructure worldwide really hasn't changed all that much. So even as we've seen dramatic increases in online shopping, and that leads, of course, to digital payments because you can't pay with cash online. So we've seen a persistent, consistent, accelerating growth in electronic payments. But in some ways, the payments infrastructure, the technology around payments, hasn't really kept up. And so that's for my company, that's obviously a very exciting opportunity because we have technology that makes payments work. And they are our software. We handle, for example, over, many trillions of U.S. dollars of payments every single day. We service every one of the largest 20 banks in the world. We service all of the large banks in South Africa, and I could keep going. But the way we think about it is we power the world's payments ecosystem. You were asking about the growth of payments. And as I said, it's been persistent, consistent, and growing. And digital payments around the world grow somewhere in the high single to low double digits every year. Now, where we're really seeing a lot of growth is in the instant payments or faster payments or real-time payments. They're called different things in different parts of the world. It's all the same. And what that is that's direct movement of money from one account to another. And why that's important is you don't have a middle network. You don't have lots of people touching that payment as it goes through, which historically we have had. And instead, it allows that movement at relatively low cost and instantaneously. So you don't have a clearing process. You don't have a settlement process. It happens as that payment occurs. And so in South Africa, there's a program called PayShop. And PayShop is similar to, in the U.S., we have FedNow. And these are programs or schemes that are managed by usually the central bank of a country, and they allow that direct transfer of money. And they come at a much lower cost. The money can move much faster, and therefore you have it's far more efficient in terms of the management of the money supply. So you can move the money faster. It can drive accelerated growth through for the economies of the world, and it gives access to efficient, fast payments, even if someone doesn't have a bank account. Because these programs are set up so they don't necessarily require a bank account. You can move money with a wallet on your phone. You can have do it completely online. So these are very exciting things, and we're seeing dramatic growth in those real-time payments. In South Africa last year, 42% growth from about 200 million to 284 million real-time payment transactions. In Africa in total, it's about 40% growth. So that's the fastest growth in the world.
Thomas, if this is such an efficient method of processing payments, historically, why has it been so expensive? Because I think about South Africa in particular, and we used to have to pay a higher fee for a real-time payment. If the technology is there and we're essentially cutting out the middle party, so to speak, why then would the banks be charging higher for this kind of service?
Yeah, so there's a number of reasons, but one of them is precisely what you just said. There's a middleman, so to speak. The networks, the people that facilitate those payments, they make money by doing that. And when you have to pay the participants in the middle, that transaction as a whole has to cost more because you have to pay them. These real-time payment transactions, they really don't have that network in the middle. And so that fee doesn't exist. And so that's the reason that it's less expensive. Historically, the technology wasn't there. It did not exist. The payments ecosystem had grown up relying on those networks and middle people. But now the technology is absolutely there and it's expanding quickly. But of course, the people that are making money off those transactions, they'd really rather it not go away from their way of doing things.
Mm. Thomas, when we look at some of those expansions within the payments ecosystem, what does the integration of new technologies like blockchain allow for in the payments world? What does it mean for making things more efficient, having better tracking on payments, making payments more secure? Because at the end of the day, when we look at payments, most of them do end up being cross-border in some respects, and you're worried about, is it a secure payment gateway? Is the processing going to be secure? And most importantly, is the money going to move accordingly and not get stolen?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll come back to the blockchain point in a second. But one of the most important things that you were just talking about is the prevention of fraud. Because, fraudsters are very smart. They're very well funded. Many of them are nation state funded. So I read recently that the prediction is in the next few years, cyber crime will be the largest industry in the world. Kind of incredible.
I can believe that.
But I can believe it. Yeah. So as the payments ecosystem continues to mature, and particularly with these real-time payments that move immediately from one account to another directly, it's incredibly important, more important than ever, that you build in fraud detection and prevention into these systems from the very beginning. And what's nice about these kind of payments methods is all of those payments go through the same central hub. So you have a central bank or some agent of the central bank facilitating that, and they see all sides of that payment transaction. It makes it easier to see, still not easy, but easier to see the potential fraud, detect those patterns, and prevent the fraudulent transactions. You asked about blockchain in particular. Blockchain is a great technology. And I'm glad you said blockchain and not cryptocurrency, because I'm not a big believer in cryptocurrency. I think it's very hard and very expensive to use cryptocurrency to buy anything in the world today. But blockchain, on the other hand, is an incredibly efficient way of tracking that transaction, as you were referring to it. So having the right ledger, knowing exactly where that money is at any given time, that's a very interesting thing. The technology is great. It hasn't really been that widely integrated into the payments infrastructure, but we'll see that more and more. But no matter how you do it, it is absolutely critical that you track the payment from point A to point B. And again, I know I'm sounding a bit like a broken record, but these real-time payments, that's precisely what you do. You know at any millisecond, where is that payment? What is going on with it from start to finish?
Thomas, AECI services clients around the world, as you mentioned. How have you seen the development of payment solutions within the African continent as opposed to the other areas that you service? I mean, Africa and areas like Latin America and parts of Asia have always been historically sort of third world regions or emerging markets. And with that comes emerging technologies, not necessarily first world technologies. But Africa has also been very intentional about the innovation that's gone into payments. How are you seeing it from an ACI perspective?
Yeah, so I see it as actually in some ways a big benefit. You talked about, I try not to talk about third world because I think it's the wrong way to
emerging
think about
markets.
It. Yeah, I mean, it's an emerging market. And what's great about this is in some ways it gives Africa or Latin America the opportunity to leapfrog some of the particularly difficult problems that have been created over many years. We were talking a moment ago about the evolution of the payments ecosystem. Because technology was so different 20, 30, 50 years ago, it grew up in a way that required all those networks and intermediaries, and now you don't need those. Well, Africa or some other emerging market, you can actually jump right over that. You don't require it. You can make much faster progress. I think it's one of the reasons we're seeing 40%+ increases in real-time payments in Africa. In the United States, it's single digits. Mm. And I think it's kind of fascinating because you don't have as much investment, as much sunk cost in the technology, and therefore you can make faster progress. India is the largest real-time market in the world, and it's second fastest growing after Africa. And why is that? It's because they didn't have all that, let's call it baggage from the past. They were able to move much faster and they just said, we're going to do this. The government actually mandated availability of real-time payments and it exploded.
Sounds like a very uncomfortable conversation the banks are about to have with the rest of us, but we'll leave it at that, Thomas.
Big opportunities.
Always an opportunity for someone, always to the detriment of someone else, I suppose. But we'll have to leave it at that, Thomas. Thanks so much for joining me. That's Thomas Worsop, who is the president and CEO at ACI, joining me in studio to have a conversation around digital payments.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Personal finance time on a Monday, and we're taking a look at the growing popularity of second-hand vehicles or second-hand set of wheels. Obviously, with the price of new cars today, it kind of makes sense when you think about all the variable factors and how expensive things can be. I am joined on the line by the spokesperson at MyWay, Siaka Masia, to take a look at this and try and unpack this and see where we get from here. Sia, thanks so much for taking the time. I saw a recent report that came out today, I think, around the fact that the second-hand market is vastly more popular than the new vehicles market. Is that the case from an insurance perspective as well?
Indeed, indeed. Thank you so much for having me, Jimmy. Indeed, we've seen, you know, a rise in, you know, second-hand cars being put on cover. And it only makes sense. Everyone is trying to you know, save each and every cent that we can. So definitely people are actually going rather for a second-hand car that is still in good condition.
Sia, when we look at the second-hand market, obviously there are a lot of considerations that go into why people would then opt for that second-hand vehicle, and obviously price being one of them. How do people approach the conversation? I mean, some people are new or first-time car buyers and are looking to say, I just need something to get me to work. When we look at that used car, whether it's used car or even a new car market, what considerations should go through people's heads around buying the right kind of vehicle?
Obviously, the price is obviously, like you've already said, it's a no-brainer. You always look at whether it's within your budget. But beyond just being within your budget, you should look at whether the vehicle is in good condition. And that becomes a bit tricky, like you're saying. If you're a first-time owner, you don't know what exactly you need to look out for. And even if you're somebody who's owned several cars, it's also still tricky because these second-hand cars that we're talking about, particularly the ones that you find on a dealership, they look as good as new. So it becomes a bit tricky. So the rule of thumb that I usually say is look if it's got a service history. A good service history is a good indication that the car has been well kept, because periodically somebody is looking at the car and seeing whether and making sure that the car is in good condition, and also take it for a drive. Most of the time it's advised when you take it for a drive, switch off the music. Don't drive around while you have the music, so that you can hear of any sounds that you might need to look out for. The third thing that I might think of, I particularly was resistant to this, but I learned the hard way, is that when you do buy a car, you can take it for a diagnosis. You know, you need to factor it when you're buying a car that I'm going to diagnose my car, because there are a lot of latent defects that your vehicle might have. But this will actually save you in the long run a lot of heartache when your vehicle breaks down if you haven't actually checked it. But those are the few, and I'll unpack some of these things as we go along.
See, when I purchase a secondhand vehicle, how does that affect my insurance? Because as you mentioned a couple of things around what to look out for and all of that. If I look out for these things and I pick up the vehicle and everything seems fine at the time I pick up the vehicle, and then something goes wrong, how does that affect my insurance? Does it affect the insurance at all?
It does. I'm glad you actually asked that question. It does. A lot of times we find our clients, you know, they've checked the car and it seems like it's in good condition. They drive it for a month or two, no problems at all, and all of a sudden it breaks down. When we do the assessment and we assess the vehicle and try to figure out what went wrong with this car, you might find that there are latent defects like mechanical issues or wear and tear issues, because this car has been driven by somebody else. You don't know their driving habits. Maybe they were very rough or whatever it is. So those things sometimes actually then will unfortunately break down when you are now the owner and 2 months after you've bought the vehicle. So unfortunately, from an insurance point of view, you're not taking out insurance for such latent defects or wear and tear. So you might find that you might have problems when you now try and claim and they tell you that this is wear and tear, it's mechanical issues. Insurance is meant to cover you for a sudden event like an accident where you collide into something. It's not for the final detail that you'd normally maybe covered by a warranty cover or a service plan or whatever it is. Insurance is really, really for an accident and not for such issues.
See, when we look at the secondhand market, a lot of the misconceptions or a lot of the stigma around the market is that it's not a new vehicle. I'm not the first person to drive it. And obviously, as you mentioned, I don't know some of the problems that come with it. But in addition to that, when you compare it with a new car market, the conversations around I've just purchased a new car, the moment I drive it off the showroom floor, it depreciates in value. How do we kind of balance that out when we look at a secondhand vehicle? Should I be worried about that depreciation? Is it a normal part of every kind of vehicle, no matter which vehicle I'm going to buy?
Yeah, unfortunately, depreciation is a reality that every vehicle goes through. A car can be brand new and you drive it for a couple of weeks, let's say 4 weeks. If you wanted to trade it back, you will find that they will factor in depreciation, because it's a fact of life that as you drive, it actually depreciates. You know, different insurers use different formulas, and usually maybe they'll you know, give an estimate of a depreciation per year. But if the loss were to happen within the year, they would obviously need to then factor it in and calculate it and say, you've been on cover for 3 months. How much has the depreciation been? So the short answer for you is that whether it's a brand new car, an old car, depreciation will always be factored in. And sometimes we try and factor it in your premium. And that's how we balance out the books.
Sia, is it better to get a secondhand car or is it better to get a new car?
Jimmy, you're putting me on the spot there. You're putting me on the spot. I can't say there's a correct answer there. There are pros and cons for having a brand new car. With a brand new car, it comes with a warranty. I mean, a lot of cars say they've got about 100,000 kilometer warranty, or some have 5-year plan and so forth. Basically, what they mean is that if you get any mechanical issues, the manufacturer themselves will make sure that they actually repair your vehicle as long as it's within those parameters. And therefore, that's an advantage of having a brand new car. And when it's a brand new car, you really have control of the health of your vehicle. But if it's a secondhand car, you are inheriting something with its own issues that are not entirely your own, and then your driving is also factored in, which makes the variables a little more wild than with a brand new car. But there is advantages of having buying a secondhand car. I know some people have their own formula that as long as it's within a 5-year age and it's less than 100,000, this is the car that I'm going to drive. And as long as you've got your parameters in place, it will then tell you what you have an appetite for. Because, a car that's less than 5 years, usually doesn't have these mechanical issues that they have. But like I say, the disclaimer is that you can't speak on in general or in absolute for all cars, because we don't know how the previous owner was. So there are pros and cons, and it would be incorrect for me to just say definitely go for a brand new car, and it would be definitely wrong for me to say stay away from second-hand cars as well. So yeah.
Lots of considerations to think about, especially when you are looking at the second-hand car market. I think we'll leave it at that, Sia. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. That was Siaka Masia, who is the spokesperson at MyWay, joining me to reflect on buying a second-hand vehicle.
The Property Pod.
Impact entrepreneur in property, Jonathan Liebman, the brainchild behind the Maboneng precinct in the Joburg CBD, has ventured into the tourism sector and hotels specifically. Liebman is now one of the driving forces behind Black Brick Apart Hotels as a co-founder. On the Property Pod this week, he shares insight on the new venture, which has emerged as Africa's fastest growing apartment hotel network.
The Property Pod. Pod.
MoneyWeb. Your trusted source for business and investment insights.
Hello, Jeremy Maggs here. I've just finished recording the next episode of Fix SA on MoneyWeb. I'm in conversation with the former chief executive of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange and soldier, Roy Anderson. We'll be looking at leadership style and approach when it comes to solving problems, comparing the role of discipline in military and civilian leadership and strategies for setting and achieving goals under pressure.
Join me, Jeremy Maggs, and South Africa's top leaders on the fortnightly MoneyWeb Fix SA podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And that's the show for today, folks. Remember, tomorrow you will be in the company of Dudu Ramela as I will be at the Money Summit taking place at the Sandton Convention Center. I look forward to seeing you there. If you will be in attendance, we'll be looking at everything from savings, investments, offshore, retirement, onshore investments, everything in between. So if you are attending the summit, please definitely come find me on the day. If you're not, then we'll take some pictures. We'll send you some pictures. It's coming up to 7 o'clock. Before we go, just a reminder, if you've missed any of our conversations, you can catch up with them online. They're available on all our platforms. They're available on the MoneyWeb app, on the MoneyWeb website. They're available on the SABC app. So you can really go catch up on the conversations anywhere you feel comfortable. As I said, coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg Host is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. They're going to have that breakdown of the great victory that was the Springbok victory over the weekend. But for now, from my side, good night.